Hello, and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Dave Cole, President and CEO of EMX Royalty Corp, traded on the TSXV under the ticker EMX, and on the NYSE under the same ticker EMX. And Dave, it's always great getting an update from you on EMX Royalty Corp. I find your company to be an interesting one in the sector in that you're a little different than some companies that just go out and buy baskets of royalties only. There are a few other peers in your group in the royalties and streaming space that do generate some of their own royalties. But what's interesting about EMX is you kind of have this triple pronged approach where a lot of what you do is background exploration, some preliminary, scouting of the properties, some soil sampling, some rock chipping, trenching, maybe some drilling. You get things ready and then you generate those royalties similar to what a prospect generator does, where you option the properties off or sell the properties, keep a royalty. But you also do go out and buy royalties when it's the right fit or when you see the right value proposition. And then you also hold strategic positions in other mining companies on the balance sheet as another value driver for the company. So I guess just first, Dave, let's start off with a reminder of why EMX Royalty is a little different in the space of royalty companies.
Shad, you're doing such a great job. I'm not sure you need me on, but my pleasure to be back with you. And yeah, we do have a unique business model, and we do practice that three-pronged approach of royalty generation, which is at our core. You mentioned the word prospect generator. We're prospect generators through and through. That's our background. And my background with Newmont Mining Corporation, where I worked for 18 and a half years before leaving to found this company, was on the pointy end of the stick, out creating value through discovery around the world. And I've taken that experience and just augmented it through time here. Now in my 20th year at EMX Royalty Corporation. And we just love to acquire prospective mineral rights, add value, get them sold, keep royalties and other payments along the way. We love to pick off royalties when we can find them at an attractive price, which is a very tough thing to do because royalties are very dear financial instruments. And then our long-term strategic investing performance has done exceedingly well for the company. And the money that we've made from that side of our business, which exceeds $50 million USD throughout our 20-year history, has just been rolled right back into the generative side and the royalty purchase side, furthering to grow our pyramid of assets.
Well, Dave, I appreciate you giving us just that overview of the company. And you always structure some very unique deals. There's been constant news flow from the company since we even chatted at the end of last year. But one of the news releases that struck my interest was this one you put out on March 8th, where you discuss creating an Idaho-focused explorer. You're basically taking 14 different precious metals and base metals projects in Idaho. You were an early mover in that area and sewing them up into this new scout Discoveries Corp. I'd love you to unpack what this means for EMX Royalty and just a little bit more about this transaction for investors.
Yeah, it's a fun one, Shad, for sure. We've always had a people first approach to this business. I've always viewed that my goal as CEO of EMX is to attract the absolute best talent I can. And one phenomenal example is Dr. Curtis Johnson, who we hired actually before he got his PhD from Mackey School of Mines in Reno. And we utilized his passion, his youthful energy, and a collection of his talent and our talent to become the largest claimant in all of Idaho. We came into Idaho really tearing apart the geological terrains. We were dominantly gold focused, but we do have a portfolio of base metal and silver properties as well within that. And we became the largest claimants in the state. We have 14 different projects now. Three or four of them have some nice meat on the bone. And Curtis said, I really want to be the CEO of my own ship. And we fully support him. And so what we're doing is we're packaging up the entire Idaho portfolio. And Curtis will become the CEO or is the CEO of that new company, Scout Discoveries. And he's taken a couple of other the geologists that he has that works with him up in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, to further this portfolio. And I think they're going to do exceedingly well. Now, of course, EMX does really well out of this too. We get a nice block of stock in Scout Discoveries, which we think is going to be, has potential to be a nice success. And then stage gate payments along the way, advanced minimum royalty payments, and of course, a production royalty at the end of the day. And that's how we commonly structure our deals. We want our counterparties to just be phenomenally successful. We're along for the ride.
Well, Dave, on this deal, it looks like if we just dig into the details a little bit more, you mentioned having the good stake in Scout. It's about a 20% stake, a 19.9% stake. You do get some of those gate payments, and you retain the 3.25% NSR on each of those 14 projects. Maybe just speak in a general sense to how, when you've structured deals like this before, some of those staged gate payments keep bringing cash flows into EMX Royalty as that company is working towards their working commitment.
You know, Shad, a great example was a brand new discovery on the Arizona Sonora property in Arizona. It's a Park Salyer deposit. And that triggered a $3 million USD payment to us just recently. It's a great example of stage gate payments. We love to tie payments to success on the properties that we have sold off so that we can collect monies in various fashions before the property goes into production. And that's a key component of our business model, because it does take a long time to go from prospecting to production. And of course, many, many projects never make it into production. So we like to receive nickels and dimes on our path to making dollars. And the Scout Discoveries deal is a good example of that.
Yeah, I think it's just another interesting fishing pole in the water that you have, Dave, because a lot of companies, when they just buy a basket of royalties, they're just waiting perpetually for those projects to either move along or not move along. Now, if they do go into production, they could be a nice payday for any company that holds royalty. But the fact that you've set this up is kind of a win-win for you and the partner company, because earning as they learn, so to speak. You're earning a little bit. They're learning a little bit more about the property. As they make certain milestones or cross certain thresholds, they're cutting checks to you. So like you say, you're making nickels and dimes along the way to the dollars. But you have this going on with a lot of different properties. You mentioned you have 240 different properties in your umbrella. Would you say roughly how many of them are in production and how many of them are in kind of a development stage where they're moving along and giving you these gate payments?
Yeah, of those 240-some mineral property positions, about 150 or 156 are royalties at this time. And then within those royalty properties, there are five that are currently cash flowing. And that would include the Leeville mine operated by Barrick in the heart of the Carlin Trend in Nevada, one of the largest gold producing regions in North America. And we've been receiving royalty income on that property for quite some number of years now that accumulate up to over $20 million USD. Then we also have a nice key royalty on the very long-lived, multi-decade-lived copper molybdenum asset in Chile called Caserones, operated by JX Nippon. That one's paying us pre-tax plus $8 million USD per year as per the last several quarters of payments to us. We're very pleased to have that. Then the Gedik Tepe mine in Turkey is another cash-flowing one. That's a 10% royalty. And that one's also multi-million dollars per year cash flow to us. We're delighted to have that. That's gold and silver dominant. And then there's the Timok project in Serbia, which is being advanced by Zinjing. That's a royalty that has been the subject of dispute, and we're in a period of negotiation with Zinjing. Those negotiations are going very smoothly. It has taken quite some time, but I do anticipate a settlement to that the shareholders will be quite pleased with. And then there's the Balya Lead Zinc Silver operation also in Turkey that has also gone into commercial production, still not reached the level of production that we'd really like to see from that property or that we believe that property has the potential to produce. They have had some metallurgical problems as they've just gotten that mine going, a bit more clay in the ore than they had originally anticipated. That clay dissipates at depth, and so we believe that the recoveries and the production from that operation will substantially augment over the years to come. So those are the five producing assets, but you mentioned other ones that are in development stage. There's another half dozen projects that are at various stages of development around the world where we see some nice results emanating from. And this really speaks to the power of a portfolio of royalties, exposing us of all those assets at no cost to us and our shareholders.
Yeah, Dave. And I think the last time we talked, in addition to those five producing assets that you just outlined, you mentioned that you had 40 cash flowing. And it took me a while to wrap my head around that statement originally. And it may have changed slightly since then, but let's just say you have roughly 40 cash flowing. Some of those are because you're getting those staged gated payments on all those different projects. So maybe just speak to that you have five producing, but you still have other properties generating cash flow for the company.
Yeah, key point. Chad, I'm glad you brought that up. A number of years ago, we did an analysis of our project generation business, and we were carefully calculating based upon our experience over a decade in the company at that point in time, the risk-adjusted net present value of the deals that we execute and how we can better that net present value. And one of the key things that came out of that study is that annual minimum royalty payments or annual lease payments to us, in addition to stage gate payments that are tied to resource advancement, et cetera, that all these nickels and dimes before we get to the production make a huge difference in the positive difference in the net present value that's risk adjusted that we do on these assets. So if you say any business produces a widget and it gives them a cost to produce that widget, and then they sell that widget and the difference between the two is the margin. So we view the cost for us to develop a new prospective piece of mineral right that we sell off to a company, and we look at the risk adjusted net present value of what we sold it for. X minus Y is our margin. The way we've increased that margin over time, one key ways at least, is to include these annual minimum royalty payments, or some people call them lease payments, etc. With junior companies, those are commonly share capital. With major companies, they're cash.
Well, I think that's a compelling value driver for the company that is often overlooked. And I should disclose, I'm an investor in EMX Royalty Corp and hold it in my portfolio. And that's one of the things that kind of tipped me over the edge, Dave, was that there's a lot of companies that can put together royalties that don't pay. There's some companies that can put together royalties that do pay, but I don't see as many putting together a solid group of cash flowing properties that are paying along the way to production. And to me, that stood out as different in the royalty space. And you mentioned that your team is pretty adept at selling or optioning these properties. Just to highlight a couple that happened in March this month already, you had announced on March 6th that you've agreed to sell the Reyna Battery Metal Project in Norway to Kingrose Mining. And then on March 1st, you just sold three projects in Sweden. So maybe we could just use those as an example of the kind of deals that your team structures and how that's a win-win for both that company and EMX Royalty shareholders.
Yeah, the key is win-win. We love to have counterparties that are successful. We're all winning if the project wins. We like to contribute to that through the intellectual knowledge that we have around those assets and help our partners be successful. Those examples that you just listed off in Fennoscandia and Sweden specifically are great examples of the bread and butter of our business. We acquire prospective mineral rights. I'll point out to you and your listeners that we're the largest single mineral rights holder in all of Fennoscandia. That's Norway, Finland, and Sweden of any company. We own more mineral rights than Boliden does, which is one of the largest Scandinavian mining companies. We've been in the area for a long time. We're copious acquirers of prospective mineral rights. We then coalesce the existing geological data, and there's some fantastic databases that are available through the state-owned surveys up in that part of the world. And then we augment that with our own field work and development of our own geologic models. And then we sell those off, as you've seen in those recent transactions. We've been doing this for years, selling them off for a combination of cash payments, share payments, advanced royalty payments, stage gate payments, and always a production royalty at the end of the day. And it's really building the base of the pyramid that creates the whole concept of what we call discovery optionality. And that's why you want to own royalties. Everybody wants to have commodity price optionality, and we have that level of optionality as well. But what really can drive the value of a royalty is when there's big discoveries that are made on that property, and we're exposing ourselves to ever increasing discovery optionality within that pyramid of assets.
Yeah, Dave, I think it's one of the key attributes of a business model like the royalty and streaming space that discovery optionality is hard to put a value on initially because you don't know if somebody's going to hit or not another partner company. But when they do hit, it's not costing you anything extra. You're not the one deploying the team to go out there and do all the hard work or heavy lifting to move it from exploration to development or to find new ounces on a producing mine or find a whole new zone next to the existing deposit. So all of those exploration upside blue sky potential are just gravy on top of the agreements that you already have in place. But you're not afraid to get your hands dirty either as a company. You do a lot of early end exploration. I'm just going to highlight one from February, Dave. You put out on the 16th, and you mentioned some of the drill results you had at your Yarrow project in Australia, 17.8 meters, averaging 4 grams per ton gold. So maybe just speak to how on the front end, before you do these partnerships, you're out there digging in the dirt, doing some sampling, doing some ground truthing yourself as an exploration company as well.
That's 100% correct. And as I said previously, that's our true passion. Doing the prospecting, finding those prospective mineral rights, acquiring them very inexpensively, advancing them. And Jarl's a super example, and Jarl's a fascinating property. You know, we originally acquired that property for the gold, and that 18 meters of 4 grams is a great example. You know, just a phenomenal hit near surface. It's got a lot of room to move. But while we were prospecting for gold, Chad, I don't know if you've heard this story, while we were prospecting for gold on that property, we were doing stream sediment sampling off in the hinterland looking for extensions of the gold mineralization. And we came across a black as coal bed of manganocrete. It is a conglomeratic rock that is cemented with manganese oxide. We thought this is very peculiar. So the guys who were in the field said, we've got to assay some of this stuff. Knocked off several samples, threw them into the assay lab, came back with a percent cobalt. You know, we were just astonished. We weren't familiar with this type of a cobalt deposit. And at first, we didn't even believe the assay results. We sent the samples off to another assay lab to have them checked. We had them reassayed at both labs. Then we went to the field and collected dozens and dozens of more samples, kept coming back at, you know, close to that 1% cobalt level. And what's fascinating is we've discovered this manganiferous zone that contains cobalt, manganese, a little bit of nickel, a little bit of copper, and a whole bunch of titanium oxide in a mineral sand deposit. And this is very, very, very interesting. We are shopping for a counterparty that will advance the cobalt and mineral sand deposit that we've discovered in addition to the gold property there. And, you know, it's just a great example of discovery optionality. You just never know where the big success is going to come from next. That one has really got our blood flowing.
Yeah, you go on looking for gold, you come out with 1% cobalt, not too bad of a deal, and a whole host of other battery metals. And with such a focus on critical minerals right now and so many people looking at, you know, things like copper and cobalt and manganese, it's just another tribute to how exploration can lead you down some unexpected turns, but sometimes you can turn over something that's really unique in the sector. And again, if you find a partner on that project, they will then take the ball and run with it from there, and you get all of their discovery optionality upside. So I guess just as we take a step back, Dave, and wrap up and give investors kind of a feel for EMX Royalty, we've talked about the triple prong approach. We've talked about the producing assets, the other cash flowing assets, the development stage assets, even this earlier stage exploration the company goes through. What are the main takeaways you'd want to leave investors with as far as how EMX Royalty is positioned in the precious metals and base metal space, but also within the royalty space?
You know, we've been building this portfolio, Chad, for 20 years, executing this exact business model. And we're at the hinge point now where the cash flow is starting to really come in. And we're moving from a junior company that's been building a royalty portfolio to a mid-tier company with strong cash flow. It's very exciting for that to happen for me, to see this come to fruition after all these years, with multiple discoveries being made, you know, across the portfolio. So it's a very interesting time for EMX, but it's a very interesting time for the entire mineral business. You know, I'll point out that in the early times of my career, the only metal that really anybody would give you any money to go explore for was gold. We still love gold. Gold is great. But nowadays, it's half the periodic table. You know, I mean, the demand for metals across the periodic table are just escalating and compounding annually. So it's a really interesting time to be in the mineral business in general.
Well, Dave, we'll keep following along as EMX continues to structure new deals, as the cash flows continue to grow from some of the projects that are already in production, and as new development projects move further down the line, de-risking them. Always nice to get an update on EMX Royalty, and looking forward to our next conversation, Dave.
Chad, always a pleasure to talk to you. Call me anytime.